Chapter 5 Saturday, 10:04 a.m. Damn, she'd seen riots less chaotic than this. Lucy hit her horn, attracting the attention of the patrolman manning the barricades. He held a hand up, ignoring her as he argued with several civilians. A TV crew had set up their equipment not 10 feet away from him. This was what happened when a case was getting older and colder by the second, and an investigation went from being a case file to a political agenda to a full-blown media storm. All with one girl's life hanging in the balance, and now very much in the spotlight. The neighborhood was an upper-middle-class development in Plumborough, a suburb northeast of Pittsburgh. Large stone and brick homes shoehorned to fit on small lots lining streets named Deer Run and Pheasant Way. The development was surrounded by farmland and forested acres holding their breath, waiting to be bulldozed in the next round of suburban sprawl. Lucy counted squad cars from Plumborough, the Allegheny County Sheriff, neighboring Monroeville, and the state police. Parked haphazardly between the various squad cars blocking the cul-de-sac were several unmarked cars. Brown Fords, courtesy of the Stadies, white Impalas from the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police. The motherlode was the large black RV, bright yellow letters, large enough to be read a block away, proclaiming it the Incident Command Center. It held the spotlight, straddling the driveway of a beige brick two-story house with no porch and rigid, unwelcoming landscaping. Worse were the two news vans at the end of the street. She wondered who called them, who was thirsting for the limelight. It wasn't like they could do more than offer a description of the missing girl. With no vehicle involved, they couldn't even issue an Amber Alert. Tapping her wedding ring against the steering wheel, Lucy blew out her breath in a string of expletives, knowing it would be her last chance to indulge herself. Part of her job was to play nice with all the other boys in blue. She exited the car and strode up to the patrolman. His cheeks were flushed, sweat rolling from below his hatband as he whirled on her. "Lady, get back in the car!" Given the noise and the crowd and chaos, including, she now saw, a few enterprising kids who had set up a lemonade stand on the curb, she might have forgiven him, if not for the fact that his hand went to rest on the butt of his gun, leveraging it a fraction of an inch from his holster. Bad instinct if you're directing traffic at a media event crowded with civilians and the press. The guy was obviously not only out of his element, he looked exhausted. She'd bet his shift had ended hours ago, but he'd been stuck out here and forgotten.
"Officer Nowicki," she read his name tag. "I'm Supervisory Special Agent Lucia Teresa Guardino."
She smiled and held her credentials up where he could see them. He squinted at her, comparing her likeness to the photo on her credentials.
"FBI?"
"Yes, sir. I know my vehicle's in the way here, but I need to get up to the scene as soon as possible. Do you know who the responding officer is? I'll need to speak with him as well."
"That would be me, ma'am."
"Wonderful. Tell you what, why don't you call your commanding officer and tell him I'm interviewing you and to send someone to relieve you while you escort me to the scene and we chat? Oh, and if someone could possibly move my vehicle to a more convenient location." She dangled her keys, and he took them. "I don't want it in your way." Nowicki nodded and spoke into his radio. When he'd finished, she asked, "So what's the story?"
"Mom got an anonymous call at 3:18 a.m., found the girl missing and called us. Apparently the girl told Mom she'd be babysitting, but when Mom called the family, they said they'd never asked her to babysit. So when we got here, we thought it was a runaway. No signs of forced entry, no signs of anything except the kid and her stuff was gone."
"Kid have a history? Anything in NCIC?"
"Nope. But then after Dad arrives, they're divorced. Mom insists the phone call was a ransom demand."
Nowicki's replacement arrived and they began up the street to the end of the cul-de-sac and the beige brick house.
"Really? So we've got a ransom kidnapping?"
Lucy wondered why she wasn't called sooner. Ransom kidnappings were not only rare, they were the kind of case a small-town department immediately booted to folks with more resources.
"See, there's the problem. Looks like the kid went voluntarily. Even covered her tracks. Last time she was seen was yesterday at school. But the phone call? Mom said it was a man's voice. He said, "We got what you want," laughed, then hung up. Sounds like a prank call. Could just be a coincidence. Lucy walked faster, trying to process all the pieces of the puzzle. What a mess. And then you've got Dad, who's apparently a friend of Pittsburgh's mayor, who's a friend of the sheriff. Ah, that explained a lot as well. They reached the scene at the end of the street, where there were less civilians, but if anything, more chaos. Thanks, Officer Nowicki. Good luck. He scrambled back towards the safe haven of perimeter duty. Ashley Yeager's home was a brick, two-story house, too large for the lot it sat on. It was the kind of house kids avoided on Halloween because they knew they'd either get no answer or a scrawny box of raisins. But the kind they'd also never TP or egg. The house was too grim, too empty-hearted to make the tricks any fun. A blonde stood in the middle of the barren lawn, beating her fists against a man's chest as he tried in vain to restrain her. Her silver satin robe had come unbelted, its hem trailing on the ground. Her feet were bare and muddy. The man wore crisply pressed navy slacks and a matching silk polo. He grabbed the woman's arms and held her in place. The expression on his face was as blank as the brick wall behind them. "It's all your fault," the woman screamed. A group of men surrounded the couple, none of them attempting to intervene, all watching and listening closely. No one seemed to notice the news crews at the end of the block, their telephoto lenses aimed at the gathering. Lucy pushed past several uniformed officers, noting representatives from several jurisdictions, Plum, Monroeville, Allegheny County. The stateies and PBP reps were in plainclothes, wearing various shades of brown suits. A good color for crime scenes. It hid most of everything you might come in contact with. Lucy had exchanged her jeans and too tight tank top for khakis and a pair of white Reeboks. Had hoped to make amends with Megan by wearing the twin set she'd gotten Lucy for her birthday, even though the light blue knit would make her look washed out and sallow if the TV crews caught her in it. Which was only one of the many reasons why she had no intention of allowing that to happen. Although the Allegheny County Sheriff had called the FBI in for assistance, Lucy had no intention of strutting onto center stage and taking over their case. Her greatest value lay behind the scenes, far from the spotlight. The mother's hysterics continued unabated. From the exasperated looks on the cops' faces, Lucy guessed this had gone on for quite some time. She pushed through to the inner sanctum, a cluster of three men, two in suits, one in a brass-riddled uniform. "Who's incident commander?" she asked. "I am," all three said at once, confirming her suspicions. "Clusterfuck with a capital fuck." Three men stared at her. Since she arrived in Pittsburgh, she'd begun a whirlwind tour of local cop shops, introducing herself to law enforcement brass of the 123 Pennsylvania agencies the SAFE CAC unit would be working with. She recognized one of the men. Dunmar, of the Allegheny County Sheriff's Department. Ah, the man with the fancy toys. He and his boss were the only cops involved who were elected officials. She'd bet a dozen Krispy Kremes he was the one with the hotline to the local media. "Nice to see you again, Chief Deputy," she said, extending her hand and plastering a smile on her face. From his scowl, it was obvious her invitation to join the game hadn't been his idea. "I'm so glad you were able to bring your new incident command van out here to help us today." She bolstered her lie by widening her smile until she feared her face would crack. Tact, diplomacy, team-building. She needed these men as much as they needed her. Not to mention a missing 14-year-old girl who should be home right now listening to bubblegum pop rock and painting her toenails. Or whatever Ashley Yeager did to amuse herself in the large, looming house that reminded Lucy of San Quentin. "Would you mind introducing me to your colleagues?" Sure. Dunmar jerked a thumb at the brown-haired man in the tan suit to his right. "Don Burroughs from the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police Major Crime Squad, and this..." The thumb waggled to indicate a tan-haired man in a brown suit on his left. is Adam Lowry from the state police. Dunmar didn't introduce her, as if he thought that would make her disappear. Nice to meet you, gentlemen. I'm Supervisory Special Agent Lucy Guardino from the FBI's Sexual Assault Felony Enforcement Squad. Sexual assault? We don't need... She interrupted Lowry. I'm sure you're all aware that crimes against children fall under the SAFE unit's purview. That includes abductions as well as high-risk juvenile runaways. Do we know which we're dealing with here?
Runaway, the statey said.
Snatched, Dunmar said. Burroughs, the PBP detective, remained silent. He was too busy checking her out, his body posture realigning itself into a wide base stance, hands on his hips, pushing his suit coat back, revealing his very big gun. Ah, one of those. She'd bet he didn't walk, not like other mere mortals. Instead, he swaggered. Ignoring his smile so wide that she could count all his teeth if she was inclined to take the time, she continued, All right, then. My job is to coordinate, to help in any way possible. All three men bristled immediately. Lucy kept her voice calm, non-confrontational. To start with, which of you is going to be our media liaison? Chief Deputy, I expect that would be you? Dunmar puffed his chest out with self-importance. Great. We're definitely having some crowd control issues down the street. Maybe you could get some of your people to deal with it and escort the media to a secure location? She eyed the obnoxious incident command van. She'd love to get it out of sight, but the news crews and the family had already seen it. Too late now. Who is conducting the search of the house and the location where Ashley was last seen? They appeared startled at her use of the victim's name. Cops usually tried to depersonalize victims, especially when it involved kids. But right now, this early in the case, she wanted these guys focused on Ashley, not on jurisdiction or who would look best on the 10 o'clock news. Has someone secured Ashley's room?
My guys cleared the house after the Plum police did an initial sweep, Lowry, the statey, said. No sign of her. Mrs. said a school bag and a jacket were missing. Couldn't get much more out of her than that.
He nodded in the direction of Ashley's mother, now quiet, slumped against the rigid chest of the man she'd been screaming at earlier. Still no tears, Lucy noticed. Right, she'd get to the family in a minute. Have you started a canvas?
The last place she was sighted was yesterday at school, in Monroeville, Burroughs said. They called us in as mutual aid. They're not equipped to deal with this kind of thing.
Sounds good. We'll need all the resources we can get. Why don't you coordinate a search of her school, canvass her teachers and as many classmates as you can track down? We'll also need a walk-and-talk centered on the school, see if we can nail down her movements. Can you and the Monroeville PD handle that?
Burroughs straightened his shoulders, taking obvious umbrage at her implication. We're good. I've already got them working on photos and flyers. Has anyone contacted NCMEC yet?
They looked at each other.
We were just getting to that.
Lowry, why don't you take care of that, since we'll want statewide coordination? I guess that leaves me to deal with the family. She frowned and darted a doubtful glance at the couple standing a few feet away from them. The men seemed more than relieved to relinquish that particular duty. Fine with her. If they were going to get anywhere with this, it was going to come from the family and what they did, or did not know. Even with stranger abductions, it was always about the family, the ones left behind, waiting. I'll get them inside. She gave the other officers her card with her contact numbers and steeled herself to handle the grieving family. The two detectives and Dunmar closed ranks behind her, watching, judging the new kid on the block. She didn't mind that. Hell, she'd been weighing their measure ever since she arrived on the scene. It was juggling the emotional napalm of the mother and the father that was going to be tricky.
Hey, LT, a familiar voice called. At last, the cavalry had arrived.
Two very disparate men approached Lucy. Special Agent Zach Taylor was SAFE's forensic computer technician, fresh enough from his graduation from the academy that he still dressed in Hollywood-inspired G-Man fashion. Narrow lapelled black suit, white shirt, dark tie, and Oakley sunglasses. His enthusiasm and frequent repetition of the phrase, "Back at Quantico, they told us," made Lucy's teeth ache. But when it came to tech stuff, he knew how to get the job done. With him was an older, bald black man. Her second-in-command, Isaac Walden, had the longest tenure of anyone at SAFE. Almost 4 years, first in Atlanta, now here with the new unit in Pittsburgh. He was 6 years older than Lucy, and no one had been able to explain to her why he hadn't moved on. By all rights, he should have been promoted long ago to supervisory special agent in charge of his own team, in a unit where the stress level was so high that mandatory psych evals occurred every 6 months. It was unheard of for an agent to remain as long as Walden. Taylor had been pegged as the class clown. She already had to quash some of his rambunctious limit testing. No problem for a mother who'd survived one toddler. Walden, she wasn't as certain about. He could be a serious head case, burnt out, biding his time until mandatory retirement. She hoped not, but for now she was withholding judgment. "Thanks for inviting us to the party," Taylor said as he reached her side. "Where do you want us?" "You take the girls' room and any electronics she may have access to. Walden, let's divide and conquer the folks." She glanced beyond them to the ever-present Fourth Estate, whose ranks were swollen now from 2 news trucks to 3. Inside. Taylor bounded into the house like a lost puppy scenting dinner. Walden remained at her side, letting her take the lead. "Here you found my boys," Walden said, as they approached the distraught mother and the stone-faced father. "Safe and sound. It was a team effort. Hope you don't mind. I let the Stadies take the credit." He merely shrugged. Angry or agreeing with her, she wasn't certain. She didn't have the time to think about it. "Mr. and Mrs. Yeager? I'm Special Agent Guardino from the FBI. Could we talk inside?" Both were silent. Mrs. Yeager had her eyes squeezed shut and fists raised as she leaned against the man. Lucy pried her away. The woman almost collapsed in her arms and led her to the house. "My baby! Where's my baby?" the mother sobbed.